The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns Gear and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgearin.com/rain.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Dang, Vader.
Oh, that's God.
Well, here we are.
I don't know. Raining on the parade. Bender, you got it.
Here we go. This is our last, my last introduction ever. Mostly because I refuse to do it. Not the last bro chat, though. And I'm also not going to do it. So we're just going to just have to look at Vader smiling over there. With his, why do you have a mustache right now anyway? You're at home.
I think mine literally just froze.
What?
Yeah, no, I'm here.
Okay,
with you.
Right. Was it Bender? Friend. I was like, I'm sitting here like, this is gonna be the best intro ever, and then it just went nothing.
I think this is Bender's way of getting out of doing the intro.
It was just all stop motion on Bender's side.
Is it still frozen?
You're kind of back. You're about what is it, like 360p? I think that might be the 56k dial up.
Oh, gosh, it's probably my interwebs.
Well, it's like it was doing too much. It was doing fine
for a second.
What would you do in that 35? Right.
Well, I think it's recording fine, probably. Yeah. So when you actually release it, we're just gonna be talking about stuff that no one else notices.
But yeah.
Anyway, well, let's go. Here we go. This is Cold Bro Chat 15, I think. Right. Bro Chat 15. I must be frozen because you guys aren't responding to me in real time.
Yeah, so. You got a delay. It's like you're talking in a stadium, and you got the delay right now, so you got to fight it.
Yeah. We're gonna start this over. This is the worst one yet.
This is the best one yet.
Welcome to the Bro Chat.
Whatever. Here we go. So Bro Chat 15, and this is the final. I guess. I mean, I'm gonna let Vader kind of fill in, but for a little while, the final KSP release until he gets more time. You gotta stop having kids. I know that. That's my lesson learned. Like, they take a lot of time, they're Vader. So, just dial it back a little bit.
Which I.
Anyway, I'm hey, Rain.
Bring
hey,
it all the way back.
Yeah. Hey, welcome. This is a 2 minute and 7 second intro.
What is happening?
I just wanna let everybody know that Bender was also the guy back in Misawa who was like, have more kids. You always wanna have more kids. And now he's like, hey, you need to slow down on the kids. So we need to remember that when you're getting advice from Bender, everybody.
Yeah.
That was before his like last shot, though, so to speak, with, hey, we're just going to do one more, and then boom, twins. So
we got two. Yeah. You know, Rain, I mean, you're probably coming out of the survival mode. You might still
be
in it.
Still in it. You know, they just turned two, which, people have like, oh, it gets easier. But actually, so I was at Guns Gearin golf tournament 2 weeks ago. Ran into Hyde. Phenomenal human being. But Hyde, yeah, he's got twins. He was one who called me when...
Desi.
And he was like, this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And, you know, Hyde being a black border patch, I was like, nah, this is not a good sign. And then I just saw him last week and he goes, yeah, it's still really tough and really hard. So it's like maybe like 3.5, 4. They like some self-sustainment, some survival skills. Yeah. But now we're in the weeds.
Yeah.
No sleep.
Yeah. It's hard to keep them alive for the first 3 or 4 years.
Well, yeah. And like they're all on a different.
Yeah. Mine are 6 now. So they're doing better.
Oh, wait. Because they can get something if they're hungry. But my deal is like they're always like one sick. And then a week later, the next one's sick. It's always like a continuous thing. Never at the same time. Like, we can't just rip the Band-Aid off and get this stuff done with. It's like, you're sick this week. Oh, you're in a good mood now. You're in a bad mood. And then flip-flop.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's I am having not experienced twins. That seems, having one little one just over a year is like, you know, just chasing them, just directions, and they're moving all over. And having a second one, probably moving in like an opposite direction would complicate things exceptionally, I can imagine. Probably even more than 100% more complicated.
It's like an exponential thing.
Yeah, there's some math involved there.
Yeah. Math. Yeah. Well, and like
when we get text when they were real little, like from the neighbors, they'd be like, hey, is this your child? You know, with a picture of a naked child running down the street, like 4 houses down, like, gosh. Yeah. Like, I swear I just saw him like 5 seconds ago. Like, how is that happening?
They're very crafty and fast. And also don't have a survival instinct just quite yet, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe they just think that the other is going to be fine. You know, like, I can do whatever because I got a backup. Maybe that's just like how they're born.
Got spares.
Yeah. Do they seem like, I've always heard that where like twins will have their own little like way of communicating and their own, like they're very close and have these little styles. Have you seen that with the twins versus your other kids or no? Neither.
Was that a bigger question?
So.
Well, it's a both of you question, I guess, because it's a plural.
I'd be interested because yours are fraternal, obviously.
Yep.
So I wonder if there's any difference. I mean, it's science, so I don't know.
Ours communicate via violence. so when one has something the other one wants, or vice versa, it's usually push, take, pull. You know, so like we're battling that right now. It's like, I understand that you're frustrated, and your only way to communicate is to like rip that out of your sister's hand or your brother's hand or hit them, but like as a functioning member of society, you can't do it. So we're teaching them those lessons right now. I don't know, like. Maybe they one day will have a communication thing, but right now it's competition for survival, I suppose.
Yeah.
What about you,
Ben? Limited resources, you know, it's prison food.
Right.
Ours didn't ever really, there's not a whole lot of competition between the two of them. That's probably because they're, you know, just like dominating all the other children in the house constantly. So there is competition between those two and the others. And so any violence is generally between them and another sibling. I don't know, man, they're funny. They're way different than the other kids. And they have learned, all my kids are really smart. Like, they're all great. These two are, like, scary. And I think it's because they just build off each other. So they have learned to do things that none of the other kids, like, thought to do, you know, which is a problem when they don't have survival instincts, like you're saying. But, I don't know. It's been really interesting to watch them kind of grow up. And now they started kindergarten like a couple months ago. And the stories that come back from their teachers are pretty funny to hear. But they have zero respect for authority at all. So it's just like one of them is like really strong-willed. And the other one is more, he like apologizes for the strong-willed one. Anyway, they're funny to watch them together. But like... they had to create a disciplinary system in kindergarten that didn't exist before my son Mac got there. But he would just be like, I'm not doing that. And Jeff would be like, he's not doing that. Would explain for him or whatever. So he'd come home with like cloudy skies. Like he refused to participate in music and PE and lunch and recess. So he's like, I'm not doing that. And he would just like walk to a corner of the school and be like, I'm not going anywhere. So it's been a learning curve. Yeah, for sure.
That's good.
Fun, though.
You got to keep those teachers on their toes, you know? You can't just give them little angels every time. That's what we do. You know, my house, my oldest, he challenges authority as well. So I assume they would get along pretty well.
Probably.
The random shifting gears, but Bender, do you see that dragon is running for office? Senate?
The Senate in Maryland, I think.
Yeah, in Maryland. So, Rain, we talked to retired one-star Dragon Tykert. He was like the wing commander at Edwards, was the first dude to drop a bomb out of the F-22 and test pilot guy. And, we, like, talked to him on the KSP, I saw that he was, like, running for office. So I was like, oh, sick.
Is he running for, like, the U.S. Senate or U.S. Congress or state?
Yeah, U.S. Senate.
I think U.S.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
I'll have to look it up, but I mean, I support his campaign because I've talked to him.
Well,
and he seems pretty legit. In fact, we were like, hey, like, this is one thing that bothers me about the F-35. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, like, I understand or whatever. And then, like, a couple weeks later, he was like, hey, I talked to this general who talked to the wing commander at Edwards who talked to the test team. And he was like, we're going to see if we can get this done or whatever. I'm like, wow, like, that's legit. You know, so he's one of the good ones, I think.
Well, you said, I think his campaign slogan is leadership, not politics, and while running for office. And I was like, that sounds good. I like the sound of that. But we'll see how that actually, you know, meets first contact.
Not knowing anything about it, it'd be a tough thing to do. You know, at some point, like, you need money, right, to fund your campaign. And so even with the best of intentions, and not saying it changes for everyone, I would not want to do it. Like, at some point, you're balancing, you know, needs and, like, what you really want to do. But, you know, like, well, I need that donation so I can buy more campaign posters and put them out there so I get voted in, you know? That's tough thing
now
to do.
He's probably...
It'd be tough to...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, man. I was going to say a useless statement. I was just going to say he's probably making TikToks or videos or something, but... Not actually useful to the conversation.
It just, I don't even know how to do that. Yeah. If he's making TikTok videos, I mean, that is against U.S. military and government policy.
He's retired, no though. TikTok. He's, you know, I mean, he's got to reach out to those young voters.
That's what he
wants. Yep. Got to reach them.
Yep. Yeah.
It's the only way to get their information.
Most people on that podcast be like, oh, we're working on, you know, they'd be like, we're working on another project. It'll be cool or whatever. And they're like little projects here and there. And then he's like, oh, I'm working on something. It'll be kind of cool. And he's running for the U.S. Senate. You know, it's like, that's a kind of a big project, I feel like. Big effort.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing was, like, I mean, we talked to him and such a polished speaker. Like, you could tell, like, he was probably one of the generals that when you'd hear him speak, you're like, that guy knows what he's talking about. But then I had talked to other people who worked for him over the years, and they were like, awesome, dude. Like, best dude I've ever worked for. So it was one of those, like, where the bro check checked out. So that was cool. So it's good. Hopefully, you know, makes progress, does something cool.
Yeah. That's what we need. Good people doing that stuff. Speaking of generals and bro checks, you know, we, never got Maestro on here, you know, and that's, I pinged him.
He did say he
would do it, but, I know you talked to him. I think we just got to keep the pressure on.
Yeah, I think it was going to happen last Thanksgiving, so about a year ago, and then we are the ones that bailed on
him. Turns out, I mean, he's kind of busy. Bad for us. I mean, he has, like, a really busy job, you know?
Yeah,
but
he is busy.
He's not here now to defend himself.
He's actually doing really good work.
Yeah, but he can't defend himself now, so.
Come on, Maestro, the people want you. I'm sure he listens to this.
I'm sure he does. Right? Yeah, it's probably the minute it drops, it's the first thing he does.
As he's sitting in traffic in D.C. for 6 hours a day.
Yeah, what else is he going to be doing?
There's another bro chat out.
Oh, well, gosh. Yeah. I feel like last time we did this.
We got to get him on
the
show.
Yeah, we did. We do. I messed up the last bro chat we had. Then we had scheduled with Mace. It was all lined up. I screwed up my schedule. But the one we actually last recorded, I was in Singapore. So, I mean, I feel like we've had a lot going on the last 2 months. What's been new with you guys?
Well, I didn't end up going on the TSP, so that opened up a lot of time to work on my secondary job, which is the security side of life, which is not as fun as flying airplanes, which means I don't fly airplanes that often. So the other day I was flying a night sortie. The C model is kind of terrifying to fly at night. It is. I never realize it until that night sortie. the mirrors, like the rear view mirrors that you can use to air refuel, which I don't still understand because it's reverse. So I'd probably run into the tanker if I tried to use them, but the mirrors were reflecting my own aircraft lights back towards me into my NVGs, causing more like glare. Cause I could not figure out where the glare was coming from. I turn the lights all the way down. I do all that stuff. And then it's like, any backlighting is not NVG compatible. So it just like complete halo. So it's like, you've got this huge canopy bow. And then on either side of the canopy bow is just the halo of light. So it is wild. Like I'm in there. Like it'd almost be better without NVGs. Like this is, it's aggressive, especially on low illum nights. That was.
So another win for a canopy bow.
Yeah, that's which I think back and you guys,
you're gonna want that thing.
You guys remember back like when we were young flying the F-16, and it was one of those like heinous weather, at least at Misawa, like, and then South Carolina would get bad weather too, like, but like just terrible weather. I didn't feel like this is super sketchy. I was just like, oh yeah, there's another night sortie, and I had like 112 hours in the airplane and no stress, not even like, oh man, you could totally die here. And now in the C model, I'm like, what am I doing out here? Like, this is nuts. Like, am I the only one that's, this has happens over the years?
Do you think that's based on experience and now realizing how dangerous this is? Or is it the C model just that bad of a plane? We can say it.
I think it's probably it's my experience, especially sitting in the back seat of students and having seen like, holy smokes, what are you doing here? You know, kind of thing. And then knowing like, hey, we don't want this to go sideways, you know, cause you're on your own. But
I assume you did backseat night rides at Holloman.
Oh yeah.
Did we do night SFOs?
No.
I feel like I did.
We didn't?
And like the B course.
I thought we did straight in SFOs at night.
Yeah, the B course.
Yeah, we did.
I don't think I ever did one. If I did, I know somebody. The bros.
Pulling closed.
Well, so we would do, you would do like overhead patterns at night. I would not.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I was in the backseat, I was like, no. The only place in the Air Force you get to do them is at the FTU.
Not doing it.
Yeah. And I was like, we're not doing it. Like, because you're going to go to the CAF. You're going to go to Shaw.
Why would you practice that?
To get more patterns. You would take off in a two-bag F-16 to do minimal area work and patterns. And they were like, you need to do overheads to get more patterns. And it's like, I'm not doing 13 overhead patterns at night with this student. Yeah.
Just to get more landing?
Yep.
Like, just more final approach experience?
Exactly.
At night?
Yep.
Oh,
that's dumb.
So we would just do radar vectors instead of 150 per pattern, you know, gas, 150 pounds of gas per pattern. It was like 400 pounds. And I was like, that's fine. And you'll be good in the future, you know, but yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like, cause there's like 10 night flights in the F-16 B course. And two of them are like primarily landing sorties. And so you're like, all right. And again, practicing in like an overnugget doesn't prepare you to fly a TACAN that's 25 degrees off, you know, final approach, the actual runway heading. Like, just fly approaches, what you're actually going to do. But yeah, that's just my two cents. I was mayor of Cockpit City those nights.
Yep. That's right. Well, I was thinking, I was like, yeah, we did that. That does seem really dumb.
I don't remember doing overheads. I must have had an IP like you. That was like, I'm not doing that.
I remember pulling closed all the time. My two sorties, whatever it was.
At night?
Oh, yeah, at night.
At night. Pulling closed.
And then, like, you have a total of like 13 hours in the jet at that point. So you're like, oh, this is normal.
Yeah. Just make it look like daytime. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's
dude,
fine.
The first NVG ride, the night rides in the B course were, I remember being terrified of those. So the pattern stuff, I don't remember that much. But I remember, like, not having any idea where my flight lead was on any of those rides. Like, what is happening? And I flew block 25, so there's no, like, there's no link, there's no nothing. Like, it was just, like, find the blinking lights, you know, looking across at freaking Phoenix, and then I'm like, there are 7,000 blinking lights. Like, I don't know who's who. And then one time, I just remember, like, he called, I can't remember what it was, but anyway, I just remember the shadow of his airplane like crossing over top of me, like one night, having zero idea that we had made that turn. I'm just like, oh my gosh, like this is sketch. But you know, I made it. Here I am.
Yeah, look at you
now.
I don't
fly close to airplanes at night anymore.
Yeah, I was trying to think like the scariest night story I have. We did have a guy in our B course who tried to rejoin with a cell phone tower on departure. Oh, I think mine are just trying to. It was so much work, you know, trying to get used to like looking through the soda straw, but then like looking under your MVGs, looking outside, trying to figure out like, oh yeah, is that my flight lead or is that a star? And they're like, okay, I have to look under my MVGs, and then we're gonna go covert, so now I can't look under my MVGs and see anything. So that's just terrible.
Yeah. No, I had. I've had a few unfortunate night experiences. Luckily, they worked out. But when I was the B courser, we're doing night to VXTI, like, or to like intercepts. So like you would get a night visual ID and like run, like what you would do as a two ship airborne, but at night. And it was 2v2. So there's two bad guys and two of us. And we were on this, like, unaware intercept, or they are unaware of us intercept. And so it's like your flight lead locks one, you lock the other one. And as I deploy to like a defense in depth kind of position for there, like WID, I break lock. So then I'm like trying to get a new lock as we are going to this merge. And I pull the other jet into my HUD to get a boresight lock. And I'm like, not good. Like, just not looking good. And I come off of that because I'm like looking at the jet and I like see the lights and I'm like, And then turns out like we're inside of a mile at night, like 90 degrees out. And we were way closer than anybody wanted to be. And my IP, who's in my backseat, was like, did you see that other jet? And I was like, yeah, I was trying to lock them. Like, and it was like, gosh, like, how insane. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Seriously, we're all going this time. But yeah, well, and then you always get your comeuppance. When I'm an FTU IP, I'm sitting in the back seat, and we are on our way to the tanker. Number one is obviously leading. I'm in the back seat of number two, because at night, even though they've tanked during the day, they have to get a IP in their back seat to air refuel at night. So we go, like, we're just following one, and I'm watching, and he like sets mill power, and we're at like 3,000 feet away from one, and I'm like, why mill power? And I see we have like 70 knots of overtake on one, and I was like, all right, this is so, like, your hands kind of like go closer to the controls, you know, as you kind of get closer to the dangerous spot. And then he finally realizes, like, as we're approaching 1,500 feet from one, and we have, like, a vertical offset and everything, so we're not going to, like, hit one, but we're going to pass one like a big dog in a second. And he rips the power to idle, rolls inverted, and does, like, a 6G pull away from one at night. And, again, we're not going to hit him. We're just going to, like, pass. And we check away. We're now like a mile and a half, because, you know, every big correction always like is insane. And we like roll upright, and you can kind of hear him like in the, you know, in the intercom. And I just go hot mic, and I was like, don't do that again. And then just go cold mic. And and because he knew it, you know, like there's nothing I'm going to tell him that he, you know, could have done. But yeah, it was one of those, like, I'm just there for the air refueling. I'm not there for anything else. He already has demonstrated he can fly at night. And then turns out he was struggling. But yeah, it's I think we've all been there, just like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
An overreaction, still a reaction. Did you guys see that? Was it a J-11 and the B-52? That guy was overshooting like a big dog.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I didn't even know they had the same speed break as the C model. Those things are very similar to the Eagle.
On the backside.
Yeah.
It's strange. They have similar things. I mean, it's not like they steal anything ever.
Yeah. it was comical to see like the huge board come up and like trying to slow down on the overtake. And he has to have closure or at like airspeed. Were you going to get the video?
Yeah. Can we get the video?
Yeah.
I mean, this is going to be, all right, this is, you know, What could go wrong here?
That's right.
All right.
We got to give feedback on his rejoin.
That's right. All right. So I'm going to share.
What we should do every bro chat. Just pull up some random video of somebody flying and just make fun of them. It'd be great.
So let's see. Hit share. Can you guys see the underneath shot? Okay, this is like the DOD, their press release. Oh wait, no, this is the guy just chilling. So I'm about to find another one. But while we do this, you can see the guy just hanging out on his wing while I find this is B-52, right? This was last week.
I mean, that's not a B-52 right there though.
No, this is a B-3.
They got props on the old B-52. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
what the bear.
This is the one that got released. They did all these flares popping off. Did you guys see all these? I'm sure you did.
No.
I haven't seen all these.
Oh, yeah. They released a ton of photos because it's all like just hanging out on the wing. I'm guessing that's a P-8.
Nope. Yeah.
Look at that.
He's not very stable over there.
Yeah, I know. It's like clear air, dude. Like,
he's probably reaching for his Polaroid camera.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh. That was loud.
That's some audio. Yeah. Look at that.
While you guys are viewing this, I'm trying to pull up the B-52 one.
Yeah, you can see. So everybody looking at
those things are so massive.
Huge.
It's hard to tell.
48-foot wingspan, right?
Yeah, they're just enormous. Like a Viper next to that just looks just...
Well, that was the other day. I was flying a C model, which is smaller than that plane. And you put like a couple C models on the wing of a 135, and you're like, 35 is not that big. Like the 135, right?
Yeah.
Like the KC-135 tanker is not that much larger than a C model.
All right, here we go. This is the unprofessional intercept of the USB.
Unprofessional.
Oh, DVIDs.
Some strong language there. Yeah. Really send a message.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of, all right. I'm just really proud to be able to pull this up. So,
yeah. Look at that.
Technology.
Look at that speed break. C model esque.
You know, like I was just like, oh, I mean, I don't even know how you do that. It's so bad.
It's north. Look at that panel. That's just super cold. You notice that?
Yeah, look at that. That is.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I wonder what
their feet are. It's just freezing to death.
That's his environmental control system keeping him nice and cool.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, look at how hot those motors are, like the up top, you know?
Yeah, like on top of it. Well, I wonder if they have the same speed brake, maybe they have the same like exhaust port for their ECS up top.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's definitely a good IR signature on the top of the aircraft. Probably not what you want to.
Yeah, probably not what you want, huh? I was thinking anytime having like the Viper in there is like, it's not that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's heat matters when you're shooting advanced IR missiles.
All right, we're going to watch this again because it took me all this time to pull it up, but just look at this clown.
Look at all those tracks that it's building now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good targeting pod work.
Yeah. It is.
I know, because this is definitely not tracking right now.
Dude, that's close.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it's just like pitch black. You're out over the Taiwan Straits there.
Oh, man.
Like, that's not really what you want if you're just cruising around to have that thing show up on your wing.
Those are some of the darkest nights, too. Like flying over the Sea of Japan. In the middle of the night with no moon.
Yeah.
And there's just no light.
Man.
No light. On the wing of a tanker, and you're like, I don't see a thing. I see three lights in space, and I'm like 50 feet from the tanker. You're like, this is so dangerous.
This is not where I want to be.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm trying to remember. It was someone going through pilot training, or maybe the B course, and he was talking about being at Spang on the tanker. You know, he was a young flight lead. And one of the dudes in the formation was just Spatial D, like you read about, and was just doing barrel rolls around the tanker. You're like, how terrifying and just close to tragedy that could have been. So night.
Well, that spicy. Was Chaos. Bender, you remember Chaos was an ADO.
I remember in the old Tornado.
Yeah. And he said, I think there was a video of it, that one of the dudes gets facially D'd. He's literally doing barrel rolls around the tanker, and Chaos like talks him off the ledge, talks him back onto his round dials, and gets him to recover his aircraft and not crash into any one of the at least two other aircraft that were around, which one of them being the massive tanker. Yeah, it's...
So I always found it like the minute I hit the weather, I would get spatial D, like if I was on the tanker and just feel like I'm in 90 degrees of bank. But then you're just fighting it. Or if you're kind of in the soup where like there's clouds, but you're hanging out on the wing. I mean, by the time I got more and more experience, realized like, oh, like I feel like I'm in a right-hand turn and bank, but in reality, I'm just floating higher and higher on the tanker and like had to force myself down low, but that's miserable.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the milk bowl is the worst, where you almost feel like you can see far, but you don't know, and there's no horizon, or like false horizons. If there's any tanker pilots or boom operators listening, when you say, come and left, can you start the turn like a second later? Because everybody is like, okay, we're going left. And then they don't turn. And then everybody on the wing does this like weird like twitch of like, no, we're not going now.
Shake your inner ear too.
Well, exactly. And that's what like blows my mind. The other day we were like in the clouds coming left. And then like, it seemed like 10 seconds goes by before we actually start the turn. And I was like, oh, we're turning. And then I'm like, why are they still turning? Why are we? And I was like, oh no, now we're turning. And I was like, this is not my favorite place to be.
I was just, man, I got an email a few weeks ago and they wanted us to talk about tankers. I need to find it now.
We can talk about tankers.
He was a boom operator and wanted to hear some stories, which I feel like we've talked about booms. Let's see. I'll have to look while we talk about it. But I mean, do feel like...
Between the three of us, like...
The joke one, I mean, it's like they always find the clouds. But, yeah, I mean, tankers save the day. Yeah. Tankers save the day first and foremost, but and they find every bit of weather out there.
Yeah. While
they make you earn it, which is, you know, I respect that.
Right. We're not going to make this easy on them. They got to earn it.
Like, you want our gas? Like, you better, you got to work for this stuff.
Yeah.
Oh.
It ain't free.
You know, one thing that, am I the only one who, when I call nose is cold, switch is safe, that my nose is not cold?
I've never had my nose cold.
I don't even know what it means.
I assume it means my radar is not currently radiating while I'm running a rejoin on the tanker with my radar. So my nose will be cold.
If that's what it means.
Yeah, that's what I assume.
I'm definitely lying.
Yeah.
My nose cold, switch is safe. Yeah, sure.
When I'm a half mile away, like, I'll snooze my radar and I'll go get gas. But yeah, like... When I'm 6 miles away on the rejoin, like no, nose is definitely not cold. Switches are safe, so you're welcome for that. Yeah. Sorry, boom operator.
It's just something. Oh,
All right, this Jordan, he sent this. This is a few weeks back, but September 25th. We haven't had a broach yet, in all fairness, since August. So, Jordy says, "Hey, I'm KC-135 crew chief. If you have time on the next broach chat, can you guys tell a few good stories of hitting the 135 or KC-10?" Well, Jordan, I think we can.
Yeah, we have a lot. I mean, between us, we have what, 5 deployments of, and then countless. I mean, Rain, how often were you hitting tankers as a demo pilot?
Fairly frequently. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fairly frequently.
Yeah.
If so, like, life was good. Yeah. Which shout out to the Knoxville guys, McGee Tyson guys. Oh. They were always hooking me up because I just need that. You know, if I can get gas over like Knoxville. And the clean Viper, you pretty much can get like almost not to the West Coast, right? But for most air
sipping gas up there. Yeah. Yeah.
Get up in the high 40s.
I will say the tanker units, they're the most bro units probably that there are.
Yeah.
Like, they're never fussy. They always hook you up when they can. So they got something good in their culture for sure. Like, it's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was agreeing. I'll throw another name out there. Brad Beyer. He's now retired. He sent me a message on Facebook not too long ago. But he was one that he would always hook us up going to Heritage Flight because we'd have not a complex thing, but like we'd have Raptors coming out of Langley. We'd have us, and then occasionally A-10 meeting up there. Like those guys, like always hooked us up. And same when I was like dragging westbound, like they're just. Tanker guys just make it happen when they can.
They do.
Yeah, not to rain on the tanker appreciation. Because go. They do. They do, yeah.
We can sandwich it. We can sandwich it. Good. Bad,
yeah,
it's
an Oreo. We learned this early in our careers.
Yeah, exactly.
Oreo but sandwich feedback. Here we go.
I'd say the only time where I've been like, all right, was when we're deployed and it is super dark. Dark. Like over the Sea of Japan dark. No moon, no light. And the tanker has one light on the entire aircraft. And it is the boom light, this little like NVG compatible light for an entire, I don't know what's, it's probably 70 feet long and got like a 90 foot wingspan or 100 some foot wingspan, like a massive plane that has one light on and you're rejoining on it. And you're like, I can't see a thing with or without my NVGs. I'm going to run into this airplane and not me because I'm not going to ask for help. But other people would be like, hey, can you turn up your lights? And they'd be like, no, we can't. And this is a 135. And they're like, nope, sorry. So you would like, the highest risk of their night, if they knew it or not, was not getting shot at. It was getting run into by one of us who was too prideful to be like, hey, can you turn on your lights? Because I don't know where you are. But then you'd go to KC-10 and it'd be like a disco ball in the sky. So I don't know what it was about the 35s. Specifically in the Iraq, Iraq area, but like light discipline was strong.
Yeah. Well, it's like, yeah, it turns out you're a huge chunk of metal. If anything was going to touch you, like that's the thing, it already sees you. So your lights don't matter.
It's not some man pad. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
I got one, and this probably to start them. It was a beautiful day. It was a beautiful, like February day. And I'm going from Shaw to Arizona. The skies cannot be any bluer, right? Like, it's the most beautiful day you've ever seen in your entire life. Just paint this picture. Three ship of F-16s. We're coming out of Shaw. We got a two ship of Raptors coming out of Langley. And we're going to rejoin over Nashville with the tanker. The tanker's coming out of McConnell. And then we're all going to truck westbound, right? So we're all, you know, a few moving pieces to time everyone. Make sure they arrive at the same time, right? We're, I don't know, call it 28,000 feet. Again, it's really important to know it's the most beautiful day you've ever seen because my number two goes lost wingman right as I initiate the rejoin with the tanker. And then he's gone. And this is over Nashville. He ends up like 4,000 feet low. I guess big sky theory, right? You know, there's just no airliners down there. But it takes forever to get him back on board. Three finally sees him, like talks my eyes onto him. We get him rejoined. The Raptors just hang out in the bozo sphere because they're like, I'm not going to get my nose in it. But the Raptors also like trying to give me point outs because he found them. But I get behind the tanker and I'm just, I again, cannot be any more stable because the air is just so clear and beautiful. And I'm just sitting back there and they're not moving the boom. I'm talking to them. I'm trying to talk to them on the radio, nothing. And then I'm starting to get tight on gas. So now I'm starting to get aggressive with my hand signals. It's just like, put the boom in my jet, you know, like the door is open. It can't be any more open. Let's do this. And so we end up like on guard, getting to switch frequencies, getting a different frequency. He's like, oh, you know, hook up. He's like, sorry, sir, we weren't talking, so I couldn't hook up. I'm like, dude, I could not have been any more stable. And turns out you knew an F-16 and two other ones are going to show up right behind here. It's like, oh, we couldn't talk to you on the radio. Like, how many times you disconnect? Like, just plug the jet. So that was like the not bro thing. He must have been like on a check ride or something. Like, nope, don't give him gas. Make him divert, you know. Like,
which technically we have calm out.
I mean, it's supposed to be
procedures.
Calm out anyway. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Like, I don't need to talk to you.
Don't,
I show
don't
there,
you put that boom out if you don't want me to just go plug into it.
Yeah, like it's we're stable. Right? We know what's going to happen here. We've done this 1,000 times. Let's not play coy. Let's just make this happen. Yeah. Give me the gas.
Got to buy him dinner first.
It happened to me in Guam this summer. We blasted the whatever. It was a complete mess anyway, but so a sortie out of Guam, we were supposed to hit the tanker or whatever, and then they were on some frequency, who knows, and nobody was controlling anything anyway.
Are you a passionate aviation enthusiast? Then you'll be thrilled to hear about our sponsor, Aircore Aviation. This exciting company has been revolutionizing the aviation industry since 2008, and they have some amazing career opportunities available. More about that in just a minute. Aircore Aviation is at the forefront of airworthiness of legacy aircraft dating all the way back to World War II. Their dedicated team is involved in various aspects of aerospace, including manufacturing, fabrication, restoration, and support, using state-of-the-art technology. Their exceptional expertise in core manufacturing capabilities like metal forming, CNC machining, and complete aircraft rebuilding has led to the restoration of some award-winning aircraft, such as a couple P-51s, such as P-51 Thunderbird, Twilight Tier, and Sierra Su-2. And if you've been following me for a while, you might remember I was fortunate enough to fly over the Super Bowl in 2018 in Minneapolis. The formation was led by Sierra Su-2 alongside two A-10s and myself in the F-16, so this is a very cool full-circle experience. These incredible achievements have captured the attention of aircraft owners, aviation enthusiasts, and the general public alike. If you've always dreamt of a career in aviation, then Air Corps Aviation is the perfect place for you. They are rapidly expanding their team in 2024 and have job openings in departments such as engineering and CAD, quality assurance, fabrication, and restoration. This is your chance to turn a passion into a profession. Air Corps Aviation is offering some amazing benefits for full-time positions, including health insurance, PTO, HSA, retirement plans, life insurance, and the extra perk of enjoying Fridays off. If you're ready to be part of a team dedicated to fulfilling the dreams through the preservation of historical aircraft, visit aircorpsaviation.com/careers today and take the first step towards an exciting career in aviation. Again, that's aircorpsaviation.com/careers. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money at
Menards. So we were couldn't get a hold of the tanker, but we could see him. So we like pull up, and then you know we're pretty short on gas anyway. And they're just like just orbiting. They're exactly where they're supposed to be. We have an ARCT. We just can't talk to each other.
Perfect.
But they're like they just have that boom tucked away. They're like we're not doing this until we get contact. So I like pulled into pre-contact. I'm just like yeah, I like need the gas like to the boom operator who I can see like sitting right there with the boom. You know, I'm like just make this happen, please or whatever. And to their credit, they eventually did. We never like got radio contact with them, but yeah. You know, we all just like we're just like put it at like we need it now, or like this whole entire mission is just gonna go home, you know, and like we just wasted everybody's time. But
yeah,
so they made it happen. But it's funny how often, you know, it's not as smooth as we hope that it would be. It seems to always be a fight.
I mean,
but he put the boom out. I got the gas. It was yeah, good. It all worked out. Turns out you don't have to talk to anybody. So.
Yeah, you don't need to.
Yeah. Well, Bender, on our deployment way back in the day, there was one night. I don't even remember what night it was. Nobody ever talked about, like, hey, there's going to be, like, I would say moderate to severe turbulence in the airspace. Nobody brought it up. But I, like, cruise over to the tanker because it's like, you know, you're going to this AR track. So I, like, drive over there. And I rejoin on the tanker. And it is insane. It is the most turbulent air I've ever flown in an F-16, and we're just hanging on. And they probably should have been like, this is too dangerous to get gas. They literally said, hey, we don't think it'll work, but you can try it. And at that point I'd AR'd like 200 times in the last like month and a half. So I was like, I think I can make it happen. And yeah, it was like idle the mill, like unloading, adding G, like the whole spectrum of flight control inputs to stay on the boom, but they made it work. They easily could have been like, no, like this is like, cause I was all over the window just trying to stay on the boom, and they let it happen. So they must've been like, at the end of their 2 months there where they were very confident in our ability and we'd been there for a while. But yeah, I appreciated whoever that crew was for helping like Weasel 5-2 get gas. What? Yeah. Almost 10 years ago.
So old. There's definitely had some big gloves. You know, like the move, the tanker tracks downrange, you know, or just like come overhead or go wherever you need to. So again, this is me and complimenting the tanker crews. Had tanker, it was with Poker. We were coming back. We're along the Iraqi border, Western border, along Syria, flowing back. Bad weather day. Hit the tanker. She was a new boom operator, I assume, because, you know, at this point, again, you've tanked so many times. I'm like hanging out on the wing waiting for him to get gas. and she is just writing her name on top of the jet, hitting every antenna and just completely scratching it up. And you're like, dude, you have not moved one inch. Like, you can't be in a more perfect position. But I remember him. He was very short and tense at one point with her. Like, you know, plug the jet right now, or like, we're having to divert to her Beale. She eventually figured it out. But, you know, it spanned everything from, like, the ones you don't have to say anything. You just slide right in position, get your gas, go to everyone's new at some point, I guess.
Yeah. You get the old, those, like, the guard tankers that are out there, and then you check in with a boom, and it's this guy, you know, it's like 62-year-old boom operator, just, you know, smoking for 75 years before he came out of the boom. It's like crazy. It's like, yeah, you're pre-contact, whatever. You're like, this is going to be a good night. Yeah. He doesn't care. He's probably not even looking out the window. He's just like, whatever, do your thing.
Yeah.
You know, you always get, you get good gas from those. The guard units are, it's where it's at.
Have you guys tanked off the KC-10 in your new fighter platforms? Can the KC-10 boom move you guys around like you can the Viper?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the C model. Like, it's a, C model's a big jet. But yeah, it doesn't, it's not like the F-16, but the, but it's definitely noticeable. Like, the 46, like, you have, like, added power. Like, you kind of stay high on the power. Like, oh man, this is, like, I can feel the jet pushing into the boom. Stand by.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, is that my door? You're muted, Rain. What were you saying? You gotta touch that mute button there, Rain.
Look at that, man. We were doing so good. Vader got a knock on the door, trying to cover it. I was just wondering, have you tanked off the KC-46, Vader?
I have, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty chill. It was in the day, though. I mean, actually, I think we did it at night, too. And it was fine. Yeah, it was, I don't remember, it didn't feel that different than the other tankers. I like KC-135s. That's my jam. I probably, because we've done it over 1,000 times. KC-10s are fine, but it takes a little bit. It just feels like you sit way lower than you do on a KC-135. Yeah. So I'm never sure exactly where the right spot is. But KC-135s are, they're good. Especially when they're like, hey, autopilot's off. And it's like, okay, this is going to be good. You know, because the autopilot on those things is just, it's a freaking nightmare. Where you're like, one and S, you know, like 1.7 Gs up. Like 0.7 G's down, 1.7 G's up. Like for 20 minutes, like that's pretty miserable.
That's quite.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I thought the 46 is, it feels like the KC-10. Like, it seems very similar.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a big plane. Like, it is crazy how large that plane is compared. Like, the 135 to the KC-10 seems large. And then the KC-10 to the 46 doesn't seem that much larger, but you could tell it's like a big plane.
Is it bigger than a KC-10, the 46?
I don't know. I'd be guessing. Because it's a 7.6, right? 7.5, yeah. 7.6?
7.6.
7.6, yeah. So I don't know. Mm. Is that bigger than a DC-10? We should know these things, right? I'm not an airline pilot. I don't know. So I assume you guys would know these things.
But. I was joking.
KC-10s are big. I mean, there's like three categories of airplanes. Like the massive ones, which is KC-10 qualifies in my mind. Like massive airplane.
C-17, C-5, yeah, 777.
Yeah, all those.
Yeah, 777 has to be enormous.
Yeah, there's different variants, too. Yeah. 777's big. I mean, when you take off weighing, you know, 750,000 pounds, like, that's a big plane. But I did joke. I joked the other day
That's how much they weigh when they take off?
Yeah, I've taken off 766,000 pounds.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, 766,000 pounds. Going Hong Kong to Memphis.
That is insane.
Yeah, it's amazing. Just the two engines, flies. Too, right? Two engines, and it's still got some left over.
What?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Gee, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They are good motors.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
760,000 pounds.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That blows my mind.
Yeah. And, you know, and then it can go fly for, you know, 15 hours, 16 hours. Just.
Gosh. America. That's America. Impressive.
I mean, some science and math was going on to make that happen. But yeah.
I thought when I heard 190,000 pounds out of a tanker, I'm like, that's dangerous. But 760,000 pounds.
I think, I mean, a little bit different too. Like, maybe call it 250,000, 245,000 pounds of gas. 70,000
just
pounds
to do some rough math. Yeah. How many gallons of gas? You said how much gas? 250,000.
Yeah, you can call it, just call 250. I mean, it's a lot of gas, you know. And then go fly it's for
only 37,000 gallons of gas sitting in that airplane.
Yeah, wouldn't want a spark to go off.
Yeah,
nope. No, I was gonna but say yeah.
Here's the thing. I think I've said it in public, but I was joking when I got hired, right? And then one of the guys in my class, Navy Top Gun dude, we were kind of joking because we got the tour of the ramp and we got a tour of the 7.6. And we're like, we're going to the 777. I couldn't pick a 777 up out of the lineup. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know what an Eagle looks like. I know what a Raptor looks like. Flanker. I'm like a 7.6, 777. I mean, now I can. I got to see the wheels down. You know, the main trucks on the 777's got six wheels. So there's the little cheater for you. A350's gotten easy for me with the... What's that?
Yeah. I said the difference between 7.6 and 7.7 you're talking about?
They look the same. Yeah. That's like my easy button for me to like figure it out. And then a DC-10 versus, or I guess a KC-10 versus, or an MD-11 versus like an MD-10 winglets. MD-11's got the winglets. So DC-10. Yeah, man, it's same for MD-10 basically. Yeah, someone's going to hear this, but like, this guy's an idiot. He got all this wrong, yeah, but exactly. Whatever.
Every captain I flew with the Delta was like, this guy's an idiot. Because they'd be like, hey, you know, follow the 7.3 or whatever. I'm like, I can't, you know, like, can you have a tail number? Like, I have no idea. Where LaGuardia is like, especially when they get into the region, they're like, you know, follow the CRJ whatever. I'm like, dude.
Yeah, I don't know what
they're
that is.
They're all CRJs. Like, dude, I have no idea. Can you count them off for me? Like, I don't get it.
I feel like...
And that didn't change. 9 months later, I still didn't know. So.
Yeah, it's not going to change, even still.
I feel like the, you know, true aviation enthusiasts are like, gosh, these fighter pilots should like planes more. It's like, yeah, we like using planes for things, you know? It's,
yeah, they're tools to be used.
Well, even when you brought up the video of the intercepts, I was, you know, I had like a little bit of a, like, scared for a second that you would ask any of us to VAD any of those videos. I'm like, don't do that. Even the fighter jets. I'm like,
we'll play this game. Good.
This will be fun. Yeah. We'll stump the dummy.
Won't be fun.
Don't do it. I was looking through this. Like, oh yeah, just go ahead and tell me what this guy is here. You know, if I can't see
everything's a MiG-29.
If I can't see the wanker, you know, then I'm like, I don't know.
The problem over there too. Is that, see, there we got a
J-10. There you go, a little J-10.
Yeah. Which, and then we got the...
See, I know the ones I don't want to see in real life. Like, if I saw that in real life, I'm like, ugh.
I told you, was in the elevator with J-10 pilots, right? I told the story? In Dubai?
On a FedEx trip?
No, this is when...
Or when you were on a...
Air show.
Yeah.
It was like two Su-35s. I got on the elevator, then two Su-35 pilots got on the elevator, and then three J-10 pilots. And the elevator music's playing. It's just like, doot, 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 doot.
That's pretty righteous.
This is wild. But seeing the J-10 fly.
You should have them on a podcast.
Yeah, they were super friendly.
Were they? How was that? Was it pretty cold in there, just environment-wise?
Yeah, so the Russians were pretty, they spoke English. The Chinese didn't speak any English, or they did, and they just didn't allude to it. Yeah. But the Russians were pretty personable. They wanted to see the Raptor, which... Yeah. At that air show, anyone could see the Raptor behind the cordon. So, like, oh, yeah, we'll show you the Raptor. But we want to see the Su-35. So we had to show them the Raptor first. Like, we said that it was a whole deal, right? Like, coordinating it. So they came out the next morning to get a tour of the Raptor. And then the next day, we went out to get a tour of the Su-35 when they didn't have any cordon, but they had, like, six film crews, like, filming us walking around. You know, we had all our maintainers and... several other people walking around it, which it was interesting. They're fighter pilots, really. I mean, I think that's what it comes down to. They just spoke Russian and flew Russian planes, but
the Su-35 is no joke too.
Yeah.
That's like
interesting aspect of seeing its demo. It is like it was doing Raptor esque things, you know, flipping and flopping around. But every day its demo was a different length, right? Because they can't take off with full internal gas and do all the crazy stuff. Unlike the Raptor, right? It's the same demo profile every single time. So if you're like, while you got apples and oranges, I think a testament to the performance of the Raptor when you're talking about doing all these crazy, you know, defying physics maneuvers. The Su-35, while it can do some really cool stuff, seeing it in person and like really paying attention, like, oh, obviously maybe it was a little hotter on, you know, Monday, so they're a little heavier on the throttle and they burn more gas. So they had a nix like two maneuvers out of it. So that's kind of interesting, I thought, but
yeah. Well, that, and I mean,
I'd be pretty nervous, I think, in an air show with the Su-35 doing its thing. I'd be like, eh, you got to be ready to run, I feel like.
Yeah.
When, like, Russian air show pilots are performing. Yeah. You know. I mean, the safety. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not sure, like, what their safety, you know, mechanisms are over there. I know that the U.S. Air Force is pretty, you know, I wouldn't say excessively, but, you know, we're pretty conservative. But Su-35, I'd be like, is he going to make that turn or is this going to be a fireball in the crowd?
Well, you know, the other thing, these, so like Dubai, it's a little bit different. Those air shows are so restrictive, unlike the U.S., right? You are in Canada, most Western countries, like, hey, you have a set of maneuvers that are like validated by your command, accepted by the FAA or Transport Canada, whatever it might be. Like they say, hey, like, we trust that your leadership has vetted this. But going to Dubai, and I think actually that air show is like happening right now, everyone has a couple days to practice, and then they have to validate with the Emirati air traffic control. And they won, like, the takeoff. You guys seen the demo takeoff. Not a fan of that one. They won like 100 feet versus like 10 feet. And then they have all sorts of like altitude guns and lasers and all this stuff. So if you go too fast, if you go too low, they call you on it and they sit you. So if you don't qualify on the Sunday, then you can't fly for the Royal Day, which is like a big deal. They bring all the royals out for that. Same with like Bahrain. So Bahrain, when I did that show, this is like the second, you know, my second year, first year in Dubai, all the leadership over there, Air Force leadership's like, hey, just play by their rules. Don't stir the pot. So, okay, yeah, sure. I'll just fly at 100 feet. It's lame. Go to Bahrain. I now know all these guys in A5. They've seen, you know, me fly multiple times, and now we're over in Bahrain. The first day I talk with like their air traffic control, and like, you have to be at 50 feet or higher for the takeoff. I'm like, that's kind of lame, but whatever. So at night, I'm in the lounge with the colonel and some of his staff, and we're just talking. He goes, no, he's like, you don't change anything about your performance. I'm like, it's not a big deal for me to fly at 50 feet. It's lame to fly at 50 feet, but I can do it. And he goes, nope, don't change anything. That's not safe. I'm like, if I fly at 10 feet, this place is going to melt and it's going to come to you. He's like, nope, do it. So like the next day, I did the normal takeoff and it melted, but he wanted the fight. I think he was getting ready to retire. So he's like, bring it, you know? Rest of the week, I flew at 10 feet for the takeoff. Awesome. So, yeah, they got weird rules.
I've been in the back seat for that takeoff. It is no joke. You're like, oh, it's late. I'm like, it's terrifying, actually, is what it is. 50 feet is terrifying.
10 feet? How do you know the gear is still? Like, you're not going to, you pretty much just get the gear off the ground and then just bring up the gear and keep yourself there.
Yeah, just let me, just be a champion. Don't descend.
Yeah, well, that's, you're going to be really.
You know, but you're in a Block 50, full afterburner. Oh, it's clean. Like, that jet does not want to descend. Like, you'd have to. Yeah, I mean, you could obviously scrape it into the ground, be a just big fireball, but you have to really have to push forward on that stick a little bit.
The old clean Block 50, man. What a freaking rocket ship. Yeah.
I remember we would climb out on radar-assisted trail departures in mill power, or you'd set, like, what was it, 850? And you'd be 20 degrees nose high in the weather. And you'd be like, this is dangerous. But like the jet would do it, even not in mill power. And you're like, holy smokes, this is crazy.
Yep. That's the way it's meant to be. Yeah. I'm curious. I wonder, you know, Block 70. I wonder how that guy performs.
Yeah, I heard that they're not because they made it way heavier.
The F-35, she's a
slow climber?
No. Yeah, no, right. I was just going to say that. I heard that the porn.
She's slow to get up to speed.
But then once it's fast, it stays fast.
It's the stadium effect. Timing. Just expect 2-second delay for anything that's happening.
Yeah. Well, we really have the exact same, like, exact same tolerance for a pause. So F-35, she's a heavy beast, but she's got a good motor. So she's slow. Like, the takeoffs aren't impressive. You know, it's just a lumbering thing. But once it gets fast, it'll outclimb up. Well, I don't know about a clean block 50, but it can climb like a freaking banshee once it gets quick. So that's pretty fun to see. I mean, you can be up in the high 30s, 15 degrees nose high accelerating. Like, you know, you're not bleeding off airspeed, which is pretty cool. So it can get going, and it can't slow down. You know, it's also, you know, heavy with no drag, so you get the nose down at an altitude like that, and, you know, just screams. So it can move. And then you try to turn it, and it's, you know, it's like you get the barn door out there, and it all falls apart. All that energy is just gone.
That's what I don't understand, because I'm not an aero major, so I don't actually understand how planes fly. But they, when it's like, oh, yeah, it's like super fast. It's got tons of energy. It's got all this thrust. But the moment you start turning, it all goes away. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, isn't it still flying? But I guess you're bleeding energy so atrociously fast that it's like it's gone before you make any use of that energy. I assume it's just a small wing.
Yeah, it has got to be small. And you're absorbing all that energy. Your body.
All that speed's going into your spine.
Right at the bottom of my spine.
Are you actually ripping 9Gs? Because everybody I've talked to is like, no. Like, you have to be like, you have to pretty much try to get 9Gs on the 35.
Yeah, you got to work hard for it. Yeah, I don't think I've pulled 9Gs in this airplane. I might have it on an AHC ride when I'm trying to do it. But no, you don't. I'm not trying to pull 9Gs. I think you can more frequently in, you know, high aspect type rides. I mean, the motor is like no joke. She's freaking pretty powerful. So low altitude, you know, that thick air, and once you have airspeed on it, it's got a lot of thrusties. But the thing that's awesome about, I think a Viper is going to kick my butt every time. Like, we get in a high aspect fight, I'm going to lose. But if I get behind a Viper, I mean, it's just, or if a Viper, a 3K with a Viper, I just want to try it one time, because you can go from 350 to zero knots in, you know, like 2 seconds. It's awesome. You know, because we have, you know, it can overshoot the AOA or whatever. So you pull like its max AOA to keep flying, and then you hit the wind button and it goes, you know, and it overshoots. And so then it just becomes like a falling giant piece of heavy metal. And a Viper can't, like, what's a Viper going to do? It's just going to fly. It's going to fly right past it. You can't bleed energy like an F-35 can. So it doesn't sound like a strength, but it is, like, cause you can get to zero flying airspeed, like, really quick.
Well, does it make the same
to the floor, but
like, do you make the same noises like in Top Gun, you know, when you hit the brakes, like it's a lot of clicking. You know, those type noises in the cockpit. Yeah,
lots of slamming of little loose pieces of metal. No, it's not like that.
Yeah, man.
It's very, like, nice tracked throttle. You know, it's very smooth feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, the stick moves. I can't remember. I think it moves a little bit more than a Viper stick. Right? The Viper stick didn't move at all, right?
That was quarter of an
inch. Maybe tiny bit of, was that what it was? Quarter inch of play.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that 35 stick moves a little bit more.
Yeah,
I don't know. I wish you guys could just fly it. It'd be fun to,
I'd like fly.
See what you guys thought.
Yeah, I flew the sim, but not the real deal. So, you know, that's not real. But
it's like the demonstrator sim.
What's that?
It was like the demonstrator sim they take around to like air shows, or was it?
Oh no, I was out at Luke, so I Luke's full up sims, and it's capable. And the nice part is because it's like a follow on to the F-16. So, like, all the switches, like, do very similar things, and you're like, I don't know this, but I have an inkling what button I want to hit here, you know. But, yeah, it was cool. The thing I thought was sick was how you could just, like, with a lot of AOA and then just step on the rudder, and it just, like, you know, in the C model, it's, like, aerodynamically you're moving your nose, but, like, in the 35, it's, like, a very sterile, like, a perfect nose movement rather than, like, My wing's not stalling. You know, as you like kind of rotate around the sky in the C model, it seemed cool. I don't know how it really is in the plane. But.
Yeah. I mean, you have to fly it right to get it flat instead of, well, you described this, I think, on a previous episode where you think you're doing like this nice pedal turn, but really you're just kind of like barrel rolling in the vertical down. Yeah. That's what happens in the F-35 if you don't do it correctly.
But, I see, yeah.
So I flew a stone, no, sorry, Brick the other day. Brick is one of Vader's friends. So he's new to our unit, so pretty new to the F-35. And he's like, I just want to practice defensive BFM, you know, all day. I'm like, this is going to be awesome. Like, anytime. So I got to be the offender the entire time. He's like, I just wanted to work on my pedal turns. Anyway, one of his last ones, he just like nailed it. Like, and I just watched the jet like in the horizontal just rotate around. And I'm like, dude, like that's what it's supposed to look like. And that presents, you know, hard problems or more difficult problems for the offender to stay behind. But I still gunned him. It was fine. It was good. If guys do it wrong, then you just have this spiraling airplane that, you know, just like plummets beneath you, and then you just follow it and shoot it the entire time it's doing it. While I think they're doing this awesome defense, they're just getting gunned the entire time. But if you do it right, like flat like that, then if the offender doesn't do anything, then you either overshoot or you get misaligned. But if you do it right, if you go kind of vertical and then follow through at the right time, then, you know, then you can follow it. But yeah, the F-35's, it's interesting. I think there's some guys that could probably, you know, hold their own. If you're flying it like Brick flew that day, then I think you'd probably survive some engagements with some Vipers and stuff. But if you do it wrong, you're just going to soak up a bunch of electron bullets.
It's all about getting slow. That's what you got to do. Just know the Viper is going to transition to offensive. And then when he goes for the gunshot, you're like, you do the top gun. You hit the brakes and he's going to fly right by.
Yeah.
Just have him help you, really can. It's transition cool. to offensive.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I know we're getting about, we're just a little over an hour. We're an hour and 2 minutes. So an hour of talking, 2 minutes of the intro, which we will leave in. I cannot wait to hear how that plays back. Have we ever edited an intro out? No. Like, and we're not starting today.
No, but some are funny 15. And some are, you know, bad. That one's going to be bad. So we should.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
It's probably a two. Yeah. You know, it's not going to be great, but.
Put some music over it and it's going to sound hilarious.
just pauses, stepping on one another.
Bleeding a little rusty because they're like, this is the last straw. That was the last intro I was going to listen on this podcast before I quit.
I think since the last one though, right? Like, I think it'd be interesting to get your guys' take. You know, Ukraine's getting F-16s. What do you guys think about Ukraine? I don't think we talked about that last time because it wasn't a thing, but now it's a thing in theory.
Yeah.
The old Vipers in Ukraine.
Yeah. Well, they're getting, because they're European, whatever, like foreign military sales Vipers that are already in Europe that they're going to get. I think they're already training at Tucson.
Yeah, they're here. Yeah. I assume it is. It is Tucson. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so they're already out there. And I talked to somebody who was knowledgeable on it, and I think it was like a 2-month course. Like, I think some of the dudes may already be on their way back, and then they're going to do like a quick top off over there, and then... Yeah, I think, somebody told me that the jets are like, because they're foreign military sales, so they're not exactly U.S., but they're like Block 52-esque. So, like, good thrust, like, pretty advanced for F-16. But it's, I think the question is, like, other than just jets to fly, like, what performance is it providing? Like, it's probably providing a lot more than what MiG-29s were, you know, or maybe still are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would assume. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know what the IADS looks like these days in Russia. You know, I assume they still have some double-digit threats. You know,
they have to.
Yeah.
Active, right? So it's not going to give you any more survivability, right, than a MiG-29 probably in that environment, other than it's made, you know, I assume they're going to shoot HARMS since they're shooting...
That's open source, right? MiG-29 shooting a HARM. Oh, we gotta edit that. No, yeah, that was like a year ago. They put a HARM, and you're like, okay,
yeah.
So Viper's made to do it. So I assume that's gonna give them some additional capability as far as how effective they are with HARMs and stuff. Plus, I assume they're shooting U.S. missiles off the rails, which is gonna give them some advantage in the air-to-air realm. So I think it is overall probably a much more capable fighter. But an SA-21 is going to house an F-16 as easily as it houses a MiG-29. So, like, that's the part.
Yeah.
I'm like, huh. I don't want to be that
guy. Brought into question would you feel comfortable, like, I mean, jumping? Well, Vader, you're a perfect example. Like, TX into the Eagle. But that's like U.S. to U.S. plane, not Soviet design to U.S. design. So you're talking language barriers, weapons differences, plane differences, like all those things. And then you got maintenance on top of that too, like maintenance and logistics. I think a lot of challenges.
It sounds like an easy fix. You're like, oh, sweet, just give them Vipers and they'll go wage war. And you're like, that doesn't. Yeah, like I finished my TX, took 4 months. So cut that TX in half, 2 months. Could I have shown up? And I was already doing that mission set in another plane. So, like, I was already doing air-to-air in the F-16. It was, like, learn air-to-air in the C model, where they're, like, they've never really done, like, seed, which I think it's probably just going to be a platform from which to do what they were doing now, you know? So I don't think they're going to, like, break the mold and start doing seed like we know seed. I think they're going to do what they used to do just in a Viper now. Yeah. But I think it's going to be better just because it's a platform built for all those weapons that they were using rather than like having to trick and having all these, I don't know, having to science their way to being able to drop those bombs and shoot those missiles.
Well, I think to be fair too, I assume 2 months of your TX was just learning how to use chalk, right?
Yeah, that's true. That was the first month only was chalk. Chalk. You can only take notes in chalk. You can
lineup cards are all in chalk.
you have a slate and keyboard.
We like to joke. Awesome. We like to have fun. Yeah. Well, I kid. Yeah, yeah, I know. I love it.
You can go draw angry things on your chalkboard that's in front of you that I can't see right now.
What I do want to say before we get going, and I just want to say thank you to all the Kodiak Shack listeners. I do appreciate everybody, all the support you've given us, all the people that reached out. You know, it sucks that we had to pause the podcast for an indefinite amount of time. Just life going crazy with work and ACSC, which... zero stars. Do not recommend.
Nerd.
But, you know, I guess I'm preparing to become a lieutenant colonel, which is insane. That you just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. Braided belts. Here you come.
That's right. My Tevas. Which I have some, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that's an extra thing.
Cut off jean shorts. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. My New Balance 904.
You're still going to sell the hats, though, right, I assume? No new episodes, right. We've got the hats. Always buy hats from Vader.
Always buy hats. Hats are always open. Thank you, though, everybody. I do appreciate all the support. It's been awesome. And bro chats, hopefully we'll keep doing these and keep having fun.
Yeah, but I think we have to keep doing bro chats. Yeah. I mean, this would be the really crappy way to end the bro chats if you just...
We're not doing that.
Yeah,
No, I guess if you pin on Lieutenant Colonel Vader, maybe we gotta call it something.
I thought either one of you should be pinning on Lieutenant Colonel somewhere between the realm of 2 and 3 years before me. So,
yeah. Well, you want to hear I don't think I'm gonna get promoted. My thing's coming up because my OPR didn't make it to the board with this whole switch. But that's neither here nor there.
Oh, OPB didn't. So did you do ACSC already, Rain?
I did. I did it.
So you did that. You have a deck, I assume.
Yep.
You're going to get promoted.
Well, so here's, you know how like the new, like the OPRs are like narrative and then PRFs are narrative. This is a really long story. I'm going to try to make it short, but the short story is.
The bro chat talking about this either.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like all that happened was like, it came back with, hey, just do it on the old OPR and we'll submit that. And it didn't get submitted in time, but you know.
Oh,
this is how much sleep I'm losing over it. None.
Yeah.
So you want me to pull up the pictures again, and you can ID some of these things, so we at least have something that's lethal.
Well, that was the funny part. The moment I started looking at him, I was like, I don't know what I actually can say, because then I'm going to talk myself into saying something that I'm not supposed to say.
I think I do that on most episodes.
Yeah, so. It's fine. It's fine. Same.
At least I feel like before, I do lose sleep sometimes when re-record, and I'm like, oh gosh, is that open source?
Is that okay for me to say?
Before the pictures are up, probably J11, Su-35, J16. I'm just gonna say all those names. Probably
yeah.
Be fine.
Yeah, those are all good.
Well, you know, we could comment on the quality of some of this photography these guys did. Let me see.
Yeah, it's a great Polaroid.
Yeah, it's great. Look at that. You want to hold on to that.
I assume you can just take your phone and record everything you're doing in the old C model, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, you can't. Cockpit. You know, you can't. Yeah, pretty much. Well, steam gauges. Nobody cares about steam gauges. It's got an advanced motor, though. Or a radar.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely a J11. Yeah.
He's got a speed breakout, too.
I know. I was just thinking, like, think about like how high these guys are. And, like, I don't know. Do you need a speed brake when you're, I don't know.
Apparently when you can't control closure.
Go back to that picture real quick.
50 knots per 1,000 feet.
Which one? The one that was just that, the speed brake?
Yeah, just to see the missile stations of that old, that guy.
Oh, yeah. That's.
So this is when this was on a podcast a while ago, but, you know, this is the C model technique in a gunfight is if they roll up behind you, is to quickly level your wings, go to AB, and then try to fly away from them, right? Didn't you say that was, what's your IP, that one? Oh, yeah. This is why you don't do that. Like, that guy is going to shoot you eight times. Like, why is that part of your, like, oh, this is a great defense. We're just going to go really fast in front of their nose.
Yeah, the assumption is that they don't have those advanced missiles. The assumption is you're fighting a, you know, you got to the merge because they got nothing left. You just, because honestly, like, I think we all would, and Benner, you said this on a previous one, like, you're going to rip every missile prior to that merge. You know, like, if I'm there, it's like, it's because I have no missiles left. So there is an argument, like, hey, if there's no missiles, then hey, like, getting slow with them is probably not where you want to be. Because gunning someone at 600 knots at the floor is super difficult. I've done that many times.
That's a problem.
I mean, the
I don't think they can
there,
shoot
though.
All those missiles.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Got like 14 of them.
That's like a lot of missiles. And are you going to bank that they just don't have one that you just didn't see? Maybe.
That's true.
Yeah.
Go merge with the Somali. That's probably where it's going to be. Be like a
yeah.
I don't know what they'd be in, like a Cessna.
Yeah. Sopwith Camel. Just
yeah, right.
Canvas airplane. My radar can't lock him. He lives in the notch.
Oh, good times.
Good times.
Yeah. Well, Vader, is there anything else you want to say? I think you should just wrap this thing up since this is going to close out the Kodiak Shack for, you know, a week or two before you're back.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you, all the Reigns Patreon subscribers. And
you missed that, Bender, in the beginning.
Still waiting on that paycheck. Yeah.
Well, maybe he said it, but we didn't hear it.
Right.
We'll find out in post.
Yeah, we'll find out in playback.
But thank you, everybody, KSP listeners.
The intro is me not saying anything.
Yeah. All of us just kind of wondering why the connection was bad.
Well, it was a good connection to start with. That's the thing. It was great before we hit record. Sorry. You had a great closing going. I don't want to interrupt you anymore.
No, it's good. But it's been great. We'll get another one of these bro chats on the calendar, and we'll keep pumping these out. But thank you, everybody. We appreciate it. And reach out to Rain if there's more topics or pictures you want us to comment on, especially bad rejoins and scary plane videos. Yeah. All right. See you guys.
Awesome. See you guys.
See ya.
The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns, Gear, and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgearin.com/rain.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.